Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Jai McDowell is a Scottish singer and songwriter best known for winning the fifth season of Britain's Got Talent in 2011, capturing the hearts of a nation with his powerhouse vocals, natural charm, and versatile interpretations of pop and classical crossover songs. Following his win, he signed with Syco Music and released his debut album Believe in 2011. That same year, Jai received critical acclaim performing at the Royal Variety Performance. He also performed on the live finale of China's Got Talent and entertained members of the royal family during the Queen's Diamond Jubilee celebrations. Over the years, he has continued to build a loyal fan base through sold-out solo concerts across the UK and Europe. He has headlined national tours, supported artists like Gareth Gates in 2014, and toured productions such as Mad About the Musicals, where he sang classics from West End and Broadway. In 2020, he starred in the UK professional premiere of Pirate Queen at the London Coliseum. Jai next returned to television screens in Britain's Got Talent, The Champions. He is also a regular in UK pantomimes and toured the UK in 2019 and 2022 with Jonathan Ansell in the critically acclaimed concert production Les Musicals. In 2023, Jai went on to join the classical crossover group G4 as part of their 20th anniversary celebrations. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Jai McDowell. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you very much for having me. And I am currently in Scotland.
At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in this creative world. And how did that journey progress?
I've always wanted to be a performer. I was very fortunate that my dad used to sing and play guitar as well. So I grew up around that sort of musical family. And I think from a very young age, I wanted to be like my dad. So then when I grew up and realised, I think maybe about 14, I was about 14 years old, and I realised that I could sing and I enjoyed it. And so I sort of started to nurture it from there onwards. And yeah, I think I what did I do? I performed in school shows. I performed pubs in our local area and bars and at weddings and birthday parties and things like that. A few karaoke's over the years. And then, yeah, and went into amateur theatre here in Scotland. And it just grew from there.
And what were the next steps?
Well, the next steps after that, so I had performed, you know, in most of the places that I could locally. So I then started to audition for like boy bands or musical theatre roles or and then X Factor here in the UK. I auditioned for that, I think, 3 times. And then as a sort of last resort, I auditioned for Britain's Got Talent in 2011. Mm-hmm. And then, thankfully, you know, went on to win the show, and my career has grown every year since, which has been lovely.
Firstly, hashtag drop the mic for winning the competition. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Did you feel that entering X Factor and British Got Talent would be a way to leverage those platforms to assist you in your building of your career?
Yes, for sure. I wouldn't, or I don't think I would be doing the career that I currently am if I hadn't done Britain's Got Talent. Although I worked very hard at other things, I think I'd gotten to a point in life where I was happy with my job and I had decided that maybe it wasn't going to happen, I think. And because of Britain's Got Talent, I was able to not only, you know, get another shot at trying to realise my dream, but then I was able to do that and then keep doing it. And it's now been 14 years since the show. And yeah, I'm still managing to continue singing and performing as a career. So I'm very, very blessed.
So once you didn't get through X Factor those three times, was it a feeling of like, oh, I'm giving up? Or did you think, okay, well, there's another platform over there that I could try?
Yeah, pretty much. I think I had decided that if Britain's Got Talent didn't work. So obviously I tried X Factor three times, and the year before Britain's Got Talent in 2010, I auditioned and I got through to boot camp stage in the show, and then didn't progress. So at that point, I had sort of sat myself down and said, either I give up or I try something else. And it just so happened that because of, you know, acts like Paul Potts and Susan Boyle, I was able to see another road as such. And so I went down it. And I'm glad I did, because it's, it's definitely one of those things. Sometimes in life, you know, the road that you think is the right one maybe isn't. And, you know, there's normally, hopefully, another road that you can find along the way that is the right one.
And also there's that whole thing of expectations of how, because a lot of people have expectations of how the road should be, and they see it as that. I'm going to dive into the story because it's very specific to what you're saying. I remember in way back, I was in the UK in 2007, and one of my favorite artists is Kylie. I was coming to see her at the O2 Arena on the Wednesday and the Saturday. I thought, I'm coming, I might as well go twice. So I'm very comfortable going to concerts by myself. And I saw there were random seats here or there, empty ones. So I went, and I'm sure you know the O2 Arena. So I was up in the sky somewhere with an observation eye view of the stage. And I thought to myself, you know what? I saw these individual seats. So on Saturday, I'm going to go to the ticket counter. I'm going to say to them, I'd like to upgrade to one of those single seats, and I don't mind paying extra money. They said, no, sold out, and they don't do that in any case. I was sitting somewhere eating lunch and just minding my own business, and some lady came up to me and said to me, are you going to the Kylie concert? We've got tickets. And I was like, no, I've got my ticket. Like, sort of, who's this weird person? And then I finished eating, and I was doing my master Reiki course at the time, and I heard my Reiki instructor shouting in my head, it will happen, but not always the way you expect it to happen. So because I expected it and saw it happening at the ticket counter, when it was happening in front of my eyes, I didn't even see it. So then I heard that. I ran to her and I said, tell me. She says, oh, her friends are sick. I said, I'll pay for the ticket. And I was literally four rows up from the front. So the whole point of this long-winded story is that, yes, there are these other roads, but also to have understanding and knowledge that it may be something that you're not expecting, and also to be open-minded for those.
Yeah, and that's right. And I find that a lot, like in life, sometimes we expect too much, I guess, but sometimes we can expect something to go a certain way, as you say, and it doesn't. And as I get older, I've learned that, you know, not to get upset too much when things don't, because I think, you know, every journey as such, every job for me has a purpose. There's someone I've got to meet, or a lesson I've got to learn, or some skills that I might learn. And I think, that's how we should kind of go through life almost. You know, I often think if I'd done X Factor, maybe if I'd gotten through one of those times, would I have won, or would I have just ended up, you know, maybe in the top? You know, I could have got somewhere, but maybe not. And then would that have put me off going for Britain's Got Talent, which then obviously I was fortunate enough to win that. But, and it's one of those things that, you know, although the journey hasn't been perfect, to, you know, nobody can take that away. You know, nobody can take the sort of experience and the knowledge away that I'd, you know, won the show. And it's, just one of those things that if I'd went a different way, what kind of career would I have had? Who would I be?
For the people who are just observers, watch the show, not talking about anything negative or scandalous, more about the goings on behind the scenes that we are unaware of. You know, we see the auditions, we see the finals, you know, we get an understanding that there are a few weeks between those different aspects. What can you tell us about the journey that potentially the audience would not necessarily know or understand?
The journey itself took, I think, from the first few auditions were in October, I think, at the end of October 2010, and then they didn't end until June of 2011. I actually spent a lot of time not telling anyone. Like, I didn't tell people for a long time. It wasn't until I knew that I was going to be in the semi-final of the show that I started to tell people, because I knew at that point, you know, I'd get on the TV and I, you know, things like that. Because, as I say, I had auditioned for shows before and then spoken to people about it and then turned out, you know, I wasn't on the telly or whatever. And so it made me look a bit silly. But this time I was just like, I'm going to keep it under wraps. I'm going to do my thing and see where it goes. And I'm still based in Scotland, but everything around the show happens in London. And so I was having to go up and down all the time. I was having to make all these excuses up for why I was going away and what I was doing. And it was quite funny, but I think, you know, there's a lot of aspects to doing a show like that, that people, myself included, didn't know about until that point. Like I remember, so I mentioned I used to do amateur dramatics, and I had played a part in the show Fiddler on the Roof. I dyed my hair black and got a perm, got curls, so, and it wouldn't come out. And I got the letter through to say that I was going to audition for Britain's Got Talent. And they said, the look that you have, you need to keep until, you know, you're out the show. My hair was like down to here, curly and black. And I was like, I can't, and this is my natural hair colour. This is, you know, this is natural. And I was like, I can't have, you know, that. So I ended up shaving it all off, which is why I had a skinhead for the show. But then I had to keep that skinhead from October till June. So I kept having to shave my hair off. And everybody thought I was going bald. And
oh, wait, so yeah, then did you wear a wig for Fiddler? Or what did you do for
No, it was my own hair. Yeah, okay. No, it was my own hair. And yeah, it was a bit mad. Yeah, just like different things. Like you go down and you have to do some pre-auditions, and then they do all the little bits where they announce who's going to win. Who's going to get through. So like the semi-finals, so that's like another couple of days, and then you get the live semi-finals, where that was the whole week and a bit. So I was down in London for just over a week, and you're in this bubble of just like TV land. It's strange because you end up, you know, meeting people and making friends with people, and then all of a sudden in the final you're against these people almost. But it was never like that. Like I still, from the show, I still have friends, you know, from the show, because we all got on really well. But it's still a weird environment because it's not normal. Like I went from being a support worker to being in London at a TV studio and being on the TV, and it was just really weird. And all of that stuff, like even I used to have to go for days in London, like for to pick clothes for the show, like to get outfits and go shopping, which sounds great. It was great, actually, to be fair. But yeah, just all that crazy stuff. And then, yeah, like for my year, we did all the auditions, and Simon Cowell didn't come till the semi-final. When you got to the semi-final and he was turning up, it was like, oh my God, Simon Cowell's in the building. That's nuts. So yeah, that was quite strange as well, like just from that point of view. And yeah, it was really weird.
You got through to semifinals, the finals. Obviously, it was a journey that kept building and kept building. Did you think that you would win? And obviously, you were surprised, but was there something in that in your brain that says, yeah, I've got this, or was it completely surprising?
I think it was a complete surprise. I always knew if I tried my best, I had the potential to. Like, I knew, you know, if I, because I, yeah, I just thought if I do know what I'm supposed to do and just sing and do it from, this sounds cheesy, but do it from the heart, be authentic. Yeah, I don't think I did. I didn't. I just sort of, back then, I was quite a, well, I still am quite shy sometimes, but I was pretty shy and pretty quiet. And I think I just went in with the hope and the dream that I would maybe like get some TV time and I could use it on YouTube or post it online, you know, that sort of thing. And then, it, as you say, it kept just growing and growing and you know, progressing. And as time went on, I think when I got to the final, the last 10, I then was like, maybe, maybe. But again, I don't know. I just don't ever like to like assume things. So I just thought, whatever happens, happens. You know, everybody talks about like frequency and positive thoughts and law of attraction just now. And I was very much trying to keep myself in that higher vibration and positive attitude so that I didn't get upset. You know, I was like, I want to enjoy this experience. I want it to be a good thing. And even if it doesn't work out, at least I tried. I just sort of thought I need to stay positive and happy and enjoy it. And I did. I loved every minute of it. Actually, the journey was brilliant. And yeah, everybody that we met, everybody that was on the show, even the you know, the backstage crew and producers and things, they were all lovely. And I was very lucky because I know that, you know, over the years I've heard people talk about slightly bad experiences on shows like this. And I'm like, no, I was very lucky that I had a great experience.
So how far is it from Scotland to London?
I don't know the miles exactly, but it's not too far. It takes from, so where I live is about 46 miles south of Glasgow Airport. And it takes about an hour on the plane. It's not too far.
Okay. What's happening currently? What are you working on?
Right now, I have just finished up touring with a group called G4. They were on the first season of X Factor back in 2004. Mm-hmm. And we finished just a week and a half ago. So they're a vocal harmony group. So I've never been part of a group before, and I'd spent 2 years with them. But I'm now sort of going back to my solo career and working on some solo stuff. So I've got some shows in the UK, some in Wales and some in London coming up. And then I've got a couple of Christmas shows in my hometown. And then in between that, I do some cruise lines. I write music as well. So I'll be writing some music in between all that. And then just taking a little bit of time just to find my feet as a solo artist again, I think, and just try and figure out which direction I want to go in. Because I love musical theatre, and I love singing and performing musical theatre roles. And I think I'd love to start trying to get into the West End of London, you know, in addition for shows and things like that. So I think that's sort of where I'm heading at this point in time.
So are you still a part of G4?
No, I've left G4 now. I was with them for just over 2 years. Yeah, I joined for their 20th anniversary because they had a previous member who took ill and they needed a replacement. So I stepped in for their 20th anniversary year, and then we extended that by a tour this year. We did a tour here in the UK for, I think, 53 dates.
Oh, wow.
Which was good. And then they have a new member starting at Christmas.
How do you create a song?
So I tend to write the lyrics more than the music. I can hear the music sometimes. And so if that's the case, like, I'll record it or hum it into my phone. And then I have to go and ask someone that can play piano or guitar or whatever if they can put what I'm hearing onto an instrument. I've tried to learn how to play instruments multiple times in my life, and I get to a point where I can't do something, or I can't move my hands, and then I get too frustrated, so I stop, and then I pick it back up again years later and I have to do everything again. I'll get there eventually.
So when you write the songs, the lyrics and that, do you write them solely by yourself or do you ever collaborate with others?
Bits and bobs. So I prefer to collaborate with other people. So if there's anyone listening, I am open to collaborating, but I prefer to collaborate with other people just because I feel like it's more fun. Like, because we are, as humans, we're our own worst critic, and I could spend hours on the one line because I think it's too cheesy or not good. Or, do you know what I mean? So it's good to have other people there just to go, no, that's a good line. Let's put it in. And then maybe it might change, but it's good to bounce off other people creatively. I like that. Most of my best songs have come from in collaboration.
I laughed because I'm the same, obviously not with writing songs, but in other ways, like my own worst critic, and I overthink and overanalyze. And it's like, that's why I was laughing. So you just gave me a reminder to calm that brain down.
Yeah, same.
Okay, so I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys to say thank you for all the hard work that you've done. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the thank yous, the listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware, massive resurgence of physical around the world. A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year in the UK as well, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And based on these exchanges, which need to be a high number every day, they monitor it for some other tax purposes. Because of the upsurge of CDs, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing that it's the teenagers, the younger kids that are diving into this world, not in inverted commas, the older nostalgic people. Then we have the streaming platforms that people consume music on. What is your observation of the landscape at the moment?
I think, so I've noticed the resurgence in records, like in vinyls. I didn't know about CDs, so that's really interesting. We did, so obviously I've been touring with G4, and we had vinyls and CDs, and a lot of people still do like to buy, because our audience are predominantly a little bit older, so they still prefer a physical copy of something. And so I've noticed that sales and things like that will still, you know, hold for our audiences, but... Yeah, I didn't realize, because that's quite nice actually, that in the shops anyway, that it's becoming more of a thing as well. And I think streaming wise, I mean, obviously as an artist who writes and records, it's you don't make much money from streaming platforms with your music, which is a shame. That's why a lot of people tour and a lot of people will, you know, release physical CDs to sell at gigs and performances, because that's where they're going to make the money back. So yeah, so it's tough right now, I think. Yeah, hopefully, I hope it changes. I hope it changes, because I think it's a shame, you know, obviously it's easier to have everything on your phone, you know, with streaming platforms and things like that. But at the same time, if it's not sustainable as a business model, or as an income stream as such, then, you know, more and more artists will leave, you know, and go somewhere else and hopefully go back to physical copies. And it's good, actually, in a way that vinyl is coming back, because, like, as you say, it's nice to have things like the booklet or the physical form of taking it out the sleeve and putting it on the turntable and, you know, just putting the needle down. And it's just really nice, and it's nostalgic as well. And it's good that it's not just, as you say, like older people. It's good that it's younger people as well picking that up and giving it a go and collecting records. And hopefully, yeah, that'll continue. I'd love to release a record of my own one day.
Not one day, we'll be soon. Let's do that.
I'll be soon.
Yes. What was the difference for you to performing solo compared to performing with G4? And did it take you a moment to get used to the differences?
Oh, very much. Yes. When I joined G4, I'd been a solo artist for about maybe 12 and a half years, maybe. But even before that, like, I did a lot of things solo, and I took a long time because the group as well, they sang in four-part harmony, and I wasn't used to singing harmonies, so that took a lot of time to learn. And then they also sing a lot of things in different languages, so I was singing in Italian and Mandarin.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it was just, yeah, mind blown. Yeah, once I got it, I think, yeah, it was nice to learn those new skills. And the next time someone, you know, says to me, we need you to sing in a different language, I'll be like, yeah, I got it. I can do that. I think as well, even now, like, because I've been with them for just over 2 years, my next gigs that I've got coming up at the beginning of next month are just myself. And that actually makes me a little bit anxious because it's been so long since I've been on stage on my own.
Yes.
So,
well, the attention's on you. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's weird because I know I can do it. I've done it before.
Yeah.
I've done it lots of times. But it's just weird because it's not been the normal thing. So yeah. So I've got a lot of practice to do.
Okay. So I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 5 hours, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to 5 songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you could think of songs by those artists, what songs would you play?
Oh. Well, the first person, I'm a huge Kelly Clarkson fan.
Mm-hmm.
Huge Kelly Clarkson fan. So anything by Kelly Clarkson would be great. I don't know why this came out of my head, but Michael Bolton. Do you know what song I really like? And you're probably going to love this. Kylie Minogue, Stop Me From Falling.
Ah, yes. I love that song. Yes.
It's a good song. Lone Star, Amazed, which is a country song. I love Keith Urban. And I actually performed one of his songs. And it's called Somebody Like You. And I love that song too. And it probably would change if you asked me again tomorrow. In fact, if you asked me again in 10 minutes, I'd probably say something.
In fact, if I had to ask you now, there'd be another 5.
Probably, yeah.
Well, that's why I love the game, because it's not about favorites. It's just like, okay, I want to listen to this, this, and this. So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Well, thank you for listening thus far. To anyone who's tuned in that's a fan already, thank you for your support over the last 14 years. It's means the world, and to everyone else who's listening, stay tuned and see what happens.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.